Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. From Queen Mary University in the United Kingdom, a study looking at 20,000 individuals found that greater intake of red and processed meat is associated with worse heart function. This was published through the European Society of Cardiology. So what do we make of this study done at Queen Mary University? I'll discuss that. We have a lot more on health and healing, about 10 different articles to share with you today, so we can live a longer and healthier life. But at least half of our program will be taken over by an elderly woman. I'm guessing she's around 89. She was in Vienna. Her parents were physicians. And when the Nazis came to power, Hitler won a major vote, 98% of the population. How did that happen? Well, because of the promises he made. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a different perspective of our current pandemic and the ceasing of our individual liberties and rights, domain of our sanctity of our body, to those technocrats, bureaucrats, and oligarchs who seem to be absolutely feasting in a gluttonous manner on the corpse of what was once a democratic process, which now is completely, totally police state and totalitarian. And you'll see what I'm talking about when you start to go to some place and you can't. You don't have the vaccine passport. And then you're expected to have identity chips. This is all going on now. It's not imaginary. It's not conspiracy. It's real. So we're going to share that woman's perspective. You can agree or disagree. Remember, these are her perspectives growing up and seeing what happened when people trust a charismatic person in power. And as you will understand, there's similarities to many, but not all, the things she's talking about. And then we'll open it up for calls. Also today, I want to take a look at the fate of the planet. The American Physical Society, quote, unconventional takes on pandemic and nuclear defense could protect humanity from catastrophic failure. That's interesting. We'll also take a look at the scientists identify human genes that fight infection. All right, we'll take a look at that. Severe weather this summer could cause another Texas power crisis from the alternate. So we're going to take a look at our environment. We're going to take a look at the foods that have the biggest water scarcity footprint, meaning maybe we should not plant these, plant others. And this is the University of Michigan. So we'll take a look at a study in Nature Food and looking at what we should not eat if we care about the future of our planet. And I know many people in this audience care very, very much about that. So we're going to look at all these different things and see if we can't make sense of them. And also, the shock and reality of catching COVID after being vaccinated. This is from Kaiser Family Foundation, and people who never thought if they got the vaccine, they would get COVID. Now they're getting the vaccine and getting COVID. In fact, 12,000 people in Israel were COVID negative, got the vaccine, became COVID positive. But weren't we told just the opposite? Of course we were. So what we're seeing now are good science studies, not political studies, not corporate finance studies by Big Pharma, but rather independent studies showing that almost everything we've been told about COVID and its management is wrong. And it's not me saying that, but you'll see as we share our information today. We begin with the latest on health and healing. And keep in mind, this is information we select so it will help people all over the world. In this study, what they looked at is that the more meat you eat, the greater your risk of heart attacks or dying from heart disease, end quote. And that's from the chief physician and scientist at Queen Mary University in London. Quote, for the first time, we examined the relationship between meat consumption and imaging measures of heart health. This may help us to understand the mechanisms underlying the previously observed connection with cardiovascular disease, end quote. The study included 19,408 participants of the United Kingdom Biobank. The researchers examined association between the intake of red meat and processed meat with heart anatomy and function. And three types of heart muscles were analyzed. And through the cardiovascular magnetic resonance, or CMRs, to assess heart function. So we're not talking about something theoretical. We're simply saying, in very lay language, the more meat you eat, the sooner you die. The more likely you are to die from heart attacks. Now, colorectal cancer and prostate cancer, breast cancer and uterine cancer, ovarian cancer are also high up in meat consumption. Mind you, this is just one factor in things that relationships we have to lifestyle that can contribute to diabetes, body mass index, the fat on our body, measures of obesity, high cholesterol, and any form of damage within the body. Now, look at it this way. When was the last time you saw ads? There are a few, like pomegranate juice. That's a good one. And orange juice, that's a good one. Nothing wrong with there. Those are both healthy. But when was the last time you saw the majority of ads that promoted healthy lifestyle? What? Think, right? Very rare. Now, how many ads do you see with the dripping cheese over French fries that are stuck onto a bun with onion rings, with bacon, and two hamburger patties on a white bread bun? That is your meat, carbohydrates, processed foods. That's a heart attack sooner or later waiting to happen. I had this lecture yesterday. I have a great group of people in my anti-aging study down here and did six lectures yesterday, about 10 hours. My voice a little strained. I apologize for that because I don't use a microphone. But it was beautiful. It was outside in the Socrates Garden. And I asked, how many here eat processed meats, like pizzas? And a lot of hands went up. And how many eat hamburgers or some form of steak, meat, chicken? All the hands went up almost. And then I asked a simple question, why? And then people began to, well, it's convenient, it's fast, it's inexpensive. I'm working too hard, don't have time to go to the market or things you suggest. So I get home, I'm tired, I just order in, you know, a pizza. Have you seen the consequences of that? Oh, yeah, yeah. And some of the people were honest and acknowledged, hey, I'm not in the same health I am now because of the choices I've made. That's why I'm here. I want to start over. So I'm suggesting that we all have a chance before we open that door, and smiling back is a heart attack or cancer or a stroke or bankruptcy or a lost relationship because we didn't nurture it, didn't give it the energy and time it required. So before we open those doors, let's do a makeover. Let's start over. Get rid of all meat in the diet. I'm not asking you to do everything all at once. Most people, that wouldn't be possible. But get out of the comfort foods. Get out of the things that are easy and quick, because almost always those are the things going to be the worst for you. But this is the science behind this. And by the way, there's more than 150 additional studies in the peer-reviewed literature showing you the dangers of meat. Here's a good one. University of Michigan, quote, eating more fruits and vegetables can help young adults, especially young women, sleep better. Well, that's good. Why? Because young adults who reported eating less than 5 servings of fruits and vegetables per day reported a high prevalence of chronic insomnia symptoms, with over 1/3 reporting difficulties with falling asleep or maintaining sleep at least 3 times per week for 3 months or longer. That means they're shortening their lifespan. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal of Sleep Health Journal. About a year ago, I did a program where I did a little additional talk on insomnia. I gave you the 5 principles that we should all abide by writing down what we are most anxious about, and write it down so that becomes our first topic for the next day in a priority list. That detaches us from the anxiety of taking that to bed. Okay, we're going to deal with it tomorrow. Good. Then turn off all lights. Unplug your computers and television. have no electromagnetic pulses in the room. Then make sure it's dark. Then put earplugs in if you have noise in the background. And also, don't eat or drink anything within 3 hours going to sleep, because you'll have to wake up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, and also that digestive process is confusing the metabolism. You're supposed to be in a catabolic, breaking down, recovery state. Instead, you're speeding it up. You got your foot on the brakes and the gas simultaneously. So now, we should be having not 3 to 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. We should have 14 servings. That's the ideal. And I know many of you are doing exactly that, and good for you. Well, let's go back a year and 1 month. At the very beginning of the COVID crisis, I published an article. It's on GaryNall.com under COVID. So please go to GaryNall.com and go under COVID. I've got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of articles there. I've got documentaries there. Everything on there is free to watch, free to use. It's information. In that, I went to the Library of Medicine, the official repository of all peer-reviewed literature that is considered high-end and quality information in science and health. And I just looked for what would build up the immune system to help a person defend themselves against any viruses, including COVID. And I wrote it all down. I've done 2 subsequent articles enhancing that, like vitamin C, vitamin D3, but at higher units than what people are getting from their diet, like 5 to 10,000 units a day of vitamin D, 3 to 5,000 milligrams of vitamin C, 50 milligrams of zinc, 200 micrograms of selenium. Others, I also gave all the botanicals, like astragalus and licorice extract and echinacea, colloidal silver. Other things can also make a difference. Then I also did a series of articles on safe and very effective medications. Those medications were things like hydroxychloroquine. When it was being attacked by the New England Journal of Medicine, The Lancet, and The New York Times, we were showing the actual science. They were showing political science. We also did articles on ivermectin. Now, go back and look at what was being promoted. Don't do anything until the vaccine or until a drug comes out, remdesivir, which ended up being a flop. This is today, as we speak, an hour ago. This is from the British Medical Journal. Quote, taking multiple vitamins, omega-3 fatty acids, probiotics, and vitamin D supplements may lessen the risk of testing positive for SARS-CoV-2, the virus responsible for COVID-19 infection, at least among women, indicates a large population study published today in the journal, the British Medical Journal, Nutrition and Prevention of Health. So, that's important. Now, I would have added to that vitamin C, zinc, and garlic, because those build up your immune system. Garlic, for example, kills bacteria and viruses in your throat, in your stomach, and in your intestine. So I'm simply broadening it out, not just to COVID, but all other factors. Also, it keeps your immune system alive. If you took zinc, vitamin C, and garlic, in addition to the other things, you're helping stimulate a stronger reaction of your natural killer cells. Those are the cells in the body that attack and engulf the free-floating cancer cells that all of us have. But we all don't get cancer because our immune system is diligent, and if it's strong, then we are less likely to become involved with cancer. If we have cancer, it's less likely to spread. If I told you about indole-3-carbinol, isothiocyanates, the broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, asparagus, kale, mustard greens and radishes put into your diet and or taken in capsule form, that would keep the cancer that is there from metastasizing. I could add in also genistein from soy also and modified citrus pectin in addition. So you see, the scientific literature is replete with ways that we can help ourselves. So I would suggest that you do this before a government agency or the Surgeon General, or the U.S. Public Health Service, or the people in charge tell you to do this. It is my guesstimate, the best guesstimate I can have, is we would have saved 50% of all the people who died. Had we done this in nursing homes, assisted living centers, if we had a hyperbaric oxygen chamber in every nursing home, assisted living center, and ICUs, we would have saved more lives. Instead, we were doing foolish things, understandably foolish, because they didn't know what else to do by intubating and using these, unfortunately, the respirators, which caused the death of a lot of people. So once again, think on this. We are ahead of the curve on giving you information that, if used, could have saved lives and prevented infections. And we're seeing this, by the way, in other countries that are using vitamin D, actually mandating vitamin D around the world, like Spain, for example. And more probiotics, that's great. For example, in the United States and Sweden, according to the British Medical Journal, quote, the figures, the equivalent figures for the United States and Sweden were a reduced risk of 18% and 37% in Sweden, respectively, for probiotics, 21 and 16% for omega-3 fatty acids, 12 and 22% for multiple vitamins, 24 and 19% for vitamin D supplements. And by the way, the amount of vitamin D they gave, I don't start anyone that low. I would give them much higher doses. Now, from Garvan Institute of Medical Research in Australia, published in the Journal of Endocrinology, vitamin D deficiency may impair muscle function. So, are you taking your vitamin D and working out? You should, because vitamin D is a hormone well known to be important for maintaining bone health and preventing rickets and osteoporosis. And so, in a recent study, vitamin D deficiency, when you don't have enough, has been reported to be as prevalent as 40% in European populations and linked to increased risk of several conditions, including COVID-19, cancer, and diabetes. Now, here's something they have not done, but I believe it's important, so I've done this. Look at the number of people who are obese and diabetic who have pre-existing comorbid conditions. What is the likelihood if someone is morbidly obese or is not exercising or is eating all the wrong food that they're likely to say, you know, I should be taking my vitamin D and vitamin C so I don't get rickets and prevent COVID. It's the people who are healthier who are testing negative or had COVID, but their body's immune system overcame it. Or if they did get COVID, their doctor gave them 3 milligrams twice a day of ivermectin and in 3 to 5 days, it was gone, dead, out of the body. And therefore, they have natural immunity. But you don't hear about that. Why? I'm not going to answer the question. I'd like you to address it. Why do you believe, with the thousands upon thousands of articles in the peer-reviewed literature, what we call science-based medicine, we're not using any of it? Only individual doctors or individual scientists are doing it. And yet, the evidence is overwhelming. I mean, we have enough studies that if you put them all in the front end loader of a gigantic tractor, there'd still be not enough room. We have so much evidence, not using any of it from official positions. Zero, zip. Why? Are they unaware of it? Are they ignorant of it? Were they not trained in nutritional biochemistry or nutritional health? Why? What could be their motive? 888-874-4888 is our talkback number. We have a highly intelligent, aware audience articulating issues. Please call in and share your point of view. I'd like to hear it. Also, good news for those of you suffering from loss of bone, which is a lot of people. It's probably 80% of people over the age of 60. From the First Affiliated Hospital of Suzhou University in China comes a study about green tea. Green tea promotes the formation of osteoblasts under inflammatory environment and increased bone mass. So according to this, the postmenopausal osteoporosis, which we know is a disease of bone mass reduction and structural changes due to estrogen deficiency, and it leads to pain and increased risk of fracture. But by taking in green tea, it helped Stop that. So, one more reason to take your green tea. Oh, and by the way, from Queensland, research from the Children's Research Institute University, quote, patients who are overweight or obese at risk of more severe COVID. So you're more likely to die or remain sick or get sick if you're obese. Shouldn't we then have a national weight loss program to help all Americans who are overweight, make it a Marshall Plan? By doing that, we could help save hundreds of thousands of lives from COVID and millions of lives from heart attacks that come from being overweight or obese. And we have no such program anywhere in America sponsored by the government at this time. This was published in Diabetes Care. So, just suggesting, let's put some energy into prevention. And on our next program, from the University of Central Florida and University of California, neuroprotective herbs for the management of Alzheimer's disease. Wow! Two major universities come up with a study, and a good study, and they're going to give you all the insights, and I'm going to share those with you tomorrow. But wasn't Wikipedia and the anti-quackery people and the skeptics said, this is all nonsense, there's no science behind it? Well, on PubMed, wow, we found a lot of articles, as did they. So we're on the side of real science, not proprietary, capitalist, you know, make a profit science. And they're just on the wrong side of this. One more reason to watch who you believe and what information you have and how you validate it. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to this extraordinary presentation by this woman. Again, I don't agree with everything, but I cannot challenge her on her own personal experience and that of her family. If you do that, then there's something terribly distorted in a person's perception. If you believe that your perception of another person's experience without knowing the person, seeing how they lived, walking their shoes, that's simply arrogance. And we have too much of that in our society today. We can learn from other people, especially one who's been wise enough to survive Nazism and has something to tell us today about the state of mind that we're in, which is extremely precarious. Oh, and by the way, tonight at 7 o'clock on the Progressive Commentary Hour, I'll be continuing my conversation with Remarkable Minds. My guest will be Derek Jensen, and we're going to talk about bright green environmental lies, how the environmental movement lost its way, why we need a new environmental movement, which organizations have we supported that we would not support, and what can we as individuals do to absolutely make a difference in saving the environment? No longer can we trust the government. It is utterly corrupt at every level, and it's tied into the polluters. So the polluters are not going to allow anything that would fundamentally change their polluting habits because that's how they make their profit from manufacturing. So it's up to us. So tonight, 7 o'clock, how you and I and millions of others can make a difference. Back in a moment with this special special commentary by this woman. And I'm guessing her age. I could be wrong. I'm guessing it's somewhere between 84 and 89 years of age. But will history repeat itself? If we do not say something and do something to power, we'll hear from her.
Thank you for inviting me here to your beautiful state of California. The media still claims that Hitler rolled into Austria with tanks and guns and took us over. Not true at all. The fact is that the Austrian people elected Hitler by 98% of the vote by means of the ballot box. Now, how could that happen in a Christian nation, almost 100% Catholic, that they would elect a monster like Hitler? Hitler did not look like a monster. He did not act like a monster. He talked like an American politician. The year was 1938. Austria was in a very, very deep depression. We had more than 30% unemployment. We had 25% inflation. And if you borrowed money from the bank, you paid 25% interest. That's why farmers were going broke. Businesses were going broke. They could not pay their mortgage, or they could not pay their taxes. What was even worse, we had riots in our cities. We had whole blocks of the cities burned down, and our law enforcement was almost helpless. They could not control the riots. The unions were calling for strikes, and industry would close, and factories would close up, hence all this unemployment. It was not unusual in my home that 30 people a day would knock on the door for a bowl of soup and a slice of bread. They could keep themselves alive by going door to door. There were no jobs. There were young people, college graduates, no jobs. The media told us that in Germany, where Hitler ruled since 1933, they had full employment, they had a high living standard, and everybody was driving the little Beetle car, the Volkswagen. We did not hear a whisper that anybody was being persecuted or arrested. We only heard good things. And of course, we spoke the same language. We spoke German. We had the same culture. There was only a border between us, Austria and Germany, like South and North Dakota. And we said, why not? We would like to have the same high living standard what Germany had, and of all the things, jobs. People wanted to work. Austrian people are not lazy. They want to work. So the Austrian people petitioned the government for a plebiscite, for an election. And hence, the Austrian people elected Hitler by 98% of the vote. So we got a new government, National Socialism. I translate for you, Nationalsozialismus, from the word national, the word Nazi derived. So we were getting a Nazi government. Nobody was elected anymore from the school board, the city commission, the county commission, legislature, and governors. They were all appointed. Well, we thought they would only pick the very best people to govern us, just like in Germany. We trusted them. We did not ask questions. So the first thing what happened, we had to carry national ID cards. You could not board a bus, you could not board a train without showing your national ID card. Don't ever let that happen here. Very bad idea. The next thing what happened, Hitler gave us free radios. So we could listen to him. He was a great orator. And then he nationalized the radio station. And we were warned if we would turn on a foreign radio station like British Broadcasting or Switzerland, death penalty. Nobody turned on a foreign radio station because you know what the death penalty meant. So the newspaper, before it hit the street, it was being censored by the government. So the only voice what we had was the government radio station and the government-controlled newspaper. So a lot of new things happened very quick. Hitler gave us equal rights. Oh, that sounded so very good. Equal rights for everybody. Also, everybody was getting a guaranteed income from the government. The equal rights, here we call it the Equal Rights Amendment. Equal rights was designed in two components, equality, economics, and social. Economics, that was designed to equalize the country's wealth, because everybody was entitled to a guaranteed equal income. In order to achieve that, they had to raise our taxes up to 70% to equalize the wealth, those who were on the lower income level, to graduate them up there to an equal level. They got subsidized housing. They got food stamps. They got heating fuel. And they got a certain amount of payment from the government for each child. So they equalized the country's wealth by taxing us 70% to bring that level, the lower income level, into an equal level. And that is called socialism.
Yes.
On the social level, of course, under socialism, everybody has to be in the workforce. Before Hitler, of course, the moms stayed home, they were good wives, and they raised their families. But under socialism, if you are not in the workforce, you are called a parasite. So the moms were being put out into the workforce. So what happened to the children? Child care centers. Mm-hmm. You could, and it was all free for everybody. You could bring your 4-month-old baby, leave it there 24 hours, 7 days a week. As longer you left your child there, the better the government liked it. The staffers of the child care centers, they were not the grandmotherly type of women who took care of the children. They were young women, highly skilled in child psychology, to mold the little babies from 4 weeks on up how the government wanted them. The government raised our children. So that was the equality, equal rights for everybody. The next thing what happened, education was nationalized. We had a very good educational system in Austria before Hitler. I went to public school. We had a very good curriculum. We even prayed in public school before class and after class. That morning, after the election, I walked into my classroom and the crucifix was gone. And the teacher said, "This morning, we greet each other, Heil Hitler." And she said, "We don't pray anymore. We sing Deutschland, Deutschland über alles, Germany above everybody." And she also said, "We would not have twice a week religious education anymore either. We would have physical education instead." Oh, we did not mind that. It was a lot more fun to play ball than study the Bible or learn long prayers. She also said that on Sunday we could not go to church anymore because Sunday was compulsory National Youth Day. We had to attend at 8 o'clock in the morning to the gymnasium instead of going to church. The first 2 hours, we had political education. Today, I would call it political indoctrination. We were being told not to listen to our parents. They were just old-fashioned, old fogies. They did not understand the young people. Only Hitler did. So don't listen to your parents anymore. And besides, you had freedom and you had rights. So our parents could not tell us anymore when to come home at night. We could decide that for ourselves. The rest of the day we had sports. We got all the sports equipment free. We got tennis rackets, we got skis, everything. And the boys of age 16, they got motorcycles. And of course, everybody had to join the Hitler Youth. That was compulsory. So the rest of the day we had sports and fun. So when we returned home at night, we told our parents how much fun we had and how much better it was, and all the sports equipment we got free, much more fun than going to church. Well, my parents were very concerned, especially my mother. So when my next school term came about in October, she announced that she would enroll me in a private school with an excellent curriculum, but not much fun. Off we went to the new school, high wall around, and a locked iron gate. And as I bid my mother goodbye at the gate, I almost hated her. I thought she was going to put me into a prison. But she was a wise woman. She said, "Today you do not understand why I'm doing this for you. But when you grow up a bit, you will understand." Had my mother not intervened, today I would be a radical Marxist. So, on holidays, I could go back home for a visit. Of course, I was curious. I would go back to my former classmates and find out what was going on. I was shocked. 16-year-old girls were having babies for Hitler, and that was glorified. Oh, Hitler wanted a lot of babies, blonde hair and blue eyes, the master race. I was shocked. So that was our educational system. Hitler also nationalized our car industry. Austria built a little car, a little bit bigger than a Fiat. Hitler said, "We don't need another little car. We already have the Beetle car, the Volkswagen." So he turned the car industry into a defense industry. Also, Hitler nationalized our banks. Hitler said, "Those greedy banks, they were the ones who charged 25% interest, and that is why the farmers were going broke and the businesses were going broke." And he looted the Jewish banks. So our banks were being nationalized. Next thing, what happened? He nationalized our healthcare system. We had a reasonable good healthcare system, which was financed by private insurance. We had good hospitals, we had good doctors, and everybody was reasonably well being cared for. This all changed very fast. My brother-in-law, who was a family physician, he told me that...
Okay, that gives you... there's about 10 more minutes, but we have many other things we want to share today. But that's one person's experience. And let's see what she said that could be equated to what's happening today. First off, how much money did you spend to go to a doctor in 1957? We went back and checked. How many bankruptcies were filed because people had put so much profit taking into medicine that you couldn't afford to go to a doctor? But when did that happen? Who was in office? Who promoted that? It's both parties, both technocrats, both experts, and the groups that they rely upon, their inner circles, the what was known as the Washington Consensus. And I appreciated when Michael Moore made his film Sicko, one part of it showed that person who had severed some fingers and had to decide which fingers he wanted to have reattached because he couldn't afford to have all of them attached. There was a time when that wouldn't have been a question. Now it is. So at what time in the future, or if ever, do we actually have a national referendum on taking the excess profit out of all the medical procedures in hospitals so that the average person, once again, could go to a hospital for any procedure and know that they wouldn't have to file bankruptcy, which for many years, from the 1980s on, was the number one reason for bankruptcy. It was only after 2000 and then again in 2008 that home foreclosures were number one and bankruptcy was right up number two. So that's important. Also, it was stated that suddenly it was a central government that made all the decisions when she said there were no longer local groups electing people to head school boards. The curriculum was decided. How it was taught was decided. Children were sent off each morning, so the mother, in most cases, who stayed at home and taught the children, could go and work. All the children would go into schools and be indoctrinated with a racist ethic, and that was of the superiority of the Aryan gene. And right now, all across America, we have a movement that's a tsunami. And some parents are finally standing up and saying, I do not want my children taught that all whites are, all Caucasians are racist. Think of that. Imagine saying that the Pope is a racist and all whites are racist. We get an awful lot of whites. Are all the Jews a racist? How about the Jews that were in concentration camps? How are you going to wrap your mind about the logic of trying to explain that when it's unexplainable? It's so vile and in contempt of anything that is honest in the natural course of understanding who commits crimes against other races or cultures, ethnicities. It is not the entire population, but how the population becomes indoctrinated starts exactly the way that the Germans did it. Control the children in Hitler's youth groups until a child is capable of killing. Now go to Africa and look at those children, innocent, honest children who were brought into the warlord gangs in several countries, Ivory Coast being one, and then conditioned that you had to shoot other children to show that you belonged there. And those that would refuse would have their arm cut off. And you see all these people today who are adults who had their arm cut off. What do we do to go in there to decommission that kind of subjugation of violence to those kids that will have post-traumatic stress their whole life because of what they experienced? So she's showing us what was considered good then because people were desperate, they were hungry, they were going door to door. We have more hungry people desperate going out on the streets begging for food. They don't go to door to door because they're not allowed than they had at any time there. That's how bad it is. 16 million children go to bed hungry each day. 2.5 million go out of school and don't have a home to go to. Who's caring for them? Which movement? I'd like to know. Which protest is going on to protect our children and those that could be sickened for life because of maladaptive immune systems from being undernourished? There are none. We've got all of our priorities wrong at this moment. We have weaponized and politicized words, and now it's a war between different groups of people. Everyone's fighting someone else, a cultural war, a race war. None of it necessary. Call people out and use the existing laws to stop people from expressing any type of bigotry, any type of racism, misogyny. any type of violence. We have laws to protect us, but this goes beyond the laws. This goes to a power issue, and we never look, why, at who's behind this, because historically we trusted the media. Ah, you only have one radio station you can listen to, the German radio station. You listen to any other, you could be killed. That's a fact. So, because the Germans would thought anyone listening to BBC was somehow an agent provocateur or partisan. So they were ruthless. Well, how do you become that ruthless? How do you have those death squads that would go in the Ukraine and kill everyone in a village, line them up and just shoot them without it impacting you? Because you were conditioned to believe that the other deserved nothing in the way of respect. So do we have people today who are being destroyed? Honest, decent people for speaking truth to power? Yes. Does the media support those whistleblowers? No, they condemn them. Where's the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN when it comes to defending Snowden, Chelsea Manning, any of the people who have whistleblowed, over 23 of them, all of them condemned by the media? So our media is a weapon now of the power state. And the power state has no counterbalance. There's no balance. So as a result, you have all the power. They have the total power to do anything they want to you. So you can imagine what's coming next. That's why I'm sharing this with you. From a scroll in, quote, Remdesivir, the drug that Anthony Fauci was promoting, doesn't save lives, but desperate families demand that doctors prescribe it. This is from Dr. Lancelot Pinto. He's a pulmonologist and with the Hengju Hospital. But when was the last time you were told that the drug that you're being given, which costs $3,000, doesn't work? You haven't. There was a big study, randomized controlled trial, and it's being overprescribed. Has anybody told you that you should not use this drug? You should use ivermectin or other drugs. No. That's who controls the narrative, and that's not by accident. So think about that, all right? These are the people in control of everything. Also, interesting that they found a pesticide that has a specific chemical in it that is killing bumblebees. That's important. Killing the bees. And this is what has been known for some time, and no one did anything about it. Because the major companies, like Monsanto, that make these products have so much power with all the advertisement they do, the media will not bite the hand that gives them the ads. So that's just some of the issues that are impacting us. Also from Mind Unleashed, quote, scientists create first ever embryos with monkey and human cells. Why would they do that? What is the purpose of that? For what? For organ transplants? But now they're going into working with the brain, and they now want to put chips in people's brains. That's Elon Musk's thing that they're doing. And it's not being challenged. It should be. You do not want people having access to your thoughts, because any mechanism that can read your thoughts can also be used to control your thoughts. Also, why is it that China has such a low vaccine rate? China's vaccine rollout is very slow, and something that when you consider how many people live in China, about almost 1.4 billion, you would have thought that as easy and quick as they can build a 100-foot skyscraper, they could have gotten the whole population. What do they know? And we're not being told. And by the way, in the United Kingdom, I just got this an hour ago, and this is from the Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency. That'd be equivalent to our CDC. 847 deaths 626,087 injuries recorded in the United Kingdom during the experimental COVID vaccines. Wow. Now, mind you, we've been told that the best we could expect is the highest 10% accurate reporting, the lowest 1%. So if we went up to that, and just simple math, if you've got, and again, these are all minimal figures, but if you have 847 people and you take that times 9, you've got 7,624 deaths. At the same time, if you take 626,087 injuries times 9, you've got 5,643,783 injuries. Put it in a different context. If any medication, drug, or medical procedure caused that amount of injuries and death, it would have been banned immediately. Not a word of banning any of this. Push it forward. And that's just one country. One country. By the way, Norway stopped the experimental AstraZeneca vaccines. Quote, higher risk associated with AstraZeneca vaccine than from COVID disease. That's interesting. And the latest is, just on this, 4,201, 10 blood disorders, one death, 1,675 cardiac disorders, there's your heart attacks, 46 deaths, 12 congenital disorders, ear disorders, endocrine disorders, eye disorders, gastrointestinal disorders, including 15 deaths, 38,968 general disorders, 130 deaths, hepatic disorders, immune system disorders, including death, infections, including 57 deaths, injuries, and metabolic disorders, 17,756 muscle and tissue disorders, neoplasm, including psychiatric disorders, 2,115 nervous system disorders, including 23,000 deaths, 24,917 for nervous system, 5,537 respiratory disorders, including 26 deaths, 9,622 skin disorders, including death, and it goes on and on. That's one country, one country. And I can go through each of the countries now and show you how bad it is. So just remember, whatever you decide to do on vaccination is your business. But understand that what you've been told that prevents COVID, it does not, was never tested, it prevents you from spreading it, it does not. This is, in my opinion, the greatest medical fraud in history. And by the way, pandemic, this is from Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, pandemic eviction bans found to protect entire communities from COVID spread. A new study led by researchers at Johns Hopkins and the University of Pennsylvania uses computer modeling to suggest that eviction bans authorized during the COVID pandemic reduced the infection rate and not only protected those who would have lost their housing, but also entire communities from the spread of infections. That's interesting. Oh, and by the way, this is, remember when they looked, if you're not a true believer? Well, this is today. Pentagon to weed out extremists by banning Marine Corps. Whoa. A Pentagon from the Pentagon. A Pentagon study aimed at identifying and rooting out extremism in the armed forces has led to the conclusion that the Marine Corps has a problem. Well, maybe, maybe not. What do they call extremism? What if you refuse to be vaccinated? Is that considered extremism? Also today, the U.S. backs Japan's plan to release radioactive water from Fukushima despite pushback from South Korea, China, and Russia. This should be important because they have millions of tons, millions of this out there, and they are not, unfortunately, finding other ways of dealing with it. So let's say hello to Bill from Long Island. And for our WBI audience, I'm sorry, but we're out of time for you. For everyone else, go to prn.fm, prn.fm. Bill from Long Island, your turn.
Hey, Gary, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Listen, just a few points. First of all, that woman's speech was chillingly similar to what is going on now. There are so many parallels to what she said and things that are happening now. But what I really wanted to say is about, I don't know, I think it was about 38, 40 years ago, I was watching my favorite show, Mort Downey. And on this particular evening, there was a debate between a nutritionist, a thin nutritionist, and a guy that he was debating that was about 400 pounds. And he was debating the fact that diet, nutrition, really not important. As a matter of fact, he was so big that he couldn't get close to the lectern. He had to step back a little. And it was bizarre because not only was he 400 pounds, but this particular individual happened to have been a doctor, a neurologist, and a lawyer. And he was debating against nutrition and health. So you ask a question before, why aren't people aware of these other issues like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, where there's peer review? It's because people like this just are unaware of these things and don't believe them. I go to a doctor who tells me that vitamin D is not important. It's the vitamin du jour, he says, the vitamin of the day. So unfortunately, this is the situation we're in. And also, I just want to make one other quick point, and the woman's speech sort of highlighted this. You often talk about universal health care on your show, and you support it. And I think that, with all due respect, is probably one of the worst ideas anybody could have. Because here she is telling you this is what they did in Germany. They centralized everything. And if you think kids are getting a lot of shots now, wait till we have a universal health care and you have no choice whatsoever.
Okay, Bill, let's deconstruct what you just said. And I appreciate you calling in and articulating your thoughts. You left out something about that thin guy in a debate, national debate, on Morton Downey with this lawyer. You forgot to mention that he became so outraged he ran across the set and pushed. I was that person debating him and knocked me over. In that moment, I had a chance to have him arrested or get up and continue the debate. I chose to get up and continue the debate. And what I also was mentioning is behind us were a group of individuals, a doctor, Emmanuel Ribisi's patients, including a doctor who was from Yale University, and he had a little indentation in his head. He had a terminal brain cancer, and Ribisi cured him. He was an MD and a PhD, and he was one of multiple professionals there who had been cured of cancer. He was saying it was all nonsense. I did many debates on Morton Downey. Peter Goldsmith was the executive producer and would bring me on because he said, you want to go up against the, I said, bring the toughest up because they're the ones who fall the fastest and the hardest. And that was one example. I wouldn't say that people don't want to believe. I say that people are conditioned to believe. Therefore, if you've been raised to believe that you need meat for every meal, it's understandable that our mothers gave us meat for every meal. They didn't do it to hurt us. They do it because they were conditioned. The power of conditioning is so prevalent in every aspect of our life. So you have to use the amount of conditioning. And the Nazis were great at conditioning, but so was Mao Zedong at conditioning. And so was Stalin. And so have all these people been mammothly successful at conditioning with negative outcomes. But to your other point, listen carefully to what I've said about universal health care. Yes, I support it if they do not use existing principles that do not work. And I outlined those principles that do not work in a very definitive book called Death by Medicine. And I took only their figures and only their statistics to show how much of what they tell us we need in the way of chemotherapy or other procedures that simply their own journals show don't work. I also advocated that we have to have, if you remember, I said with universal health care comes doctors who are given curriculum not sponsored by the pharmaceutical industries, so they learn about homeopathy and naturopathy and prevention, and they learn about the dangers of vaccines, or if there is a vaccine made that would work, and I would certainly support it, it has to pass the mustard test, not what is used today, which is fraudulent science, where there's no real placebo in a study. And then I also said that we should have freedom of choice. And I also suggested that if you wanted private insurance and private health care, you should have a right to have that. So in effect, you have a two-tier system that for everyone who wants universal health care, they're going to be able to get, at their selection, doctors who will use complementary and holistic approaches, not just orthodoxy. And there would be independent, non-industry review experts who would look at all the therapeutic models for heart disease, for neurological conditions, and then use what is proven by the actual peer-reviewed literature to work. Everything I mention on my program every day comes from PubMed. That's orthodox medicine. So you can find everything you need to remedy the limitations in our health model. Now, you've also, I'm sure, heard me challenge Obamacare and other providers of health care because, A, even though it covered a lot of people, didn't cover everyone, the very procedures people were getting for free were themselves non-scientific and can kill a person. And that's why I said that iatrogenesis, according to the Journal of the American Medical Association, the third leading cause of death in America, medical-induced disease and death. But they did not include infections in hospital. They did not include, like, bed sores. They did not include malnutrition in hospitals. And those were only deaths in hospitals. They did not count any deaths from home. So you got out of a hospital, you went home, you died of a heart attack due to something that was given to you. It doesn't count. So when you look at correcting what is wrong with medical procedures using non-proprietary therapies and including a whole spectrum of holistic therapies starting in medical school, and then have a two-tier system that if you want private care and you want to have your orthodox doctor give you orthodox drugs, you have every right to do that. That's what you left out of your statement, Bill. Final thought? Thank you for calling in.
Am I still on?
Yeah, real quick, final thought.
I just think, you know, the problem is the medical system today is one-sixth of the economy. It is huge. This has to come from the grassroots. There's no way that you're ever going to have a nationalized healthcare system. It has to come from the grassroots down
Why
below.
Do you are right, Bill. Bill, but you're right. If we look, I gave 50 progressive principles that we could all benefit from. I gave it 2 weeks ago. I listed every one of the 50 that, like, eliminating the Glass-Steagall Act, or reinstating Glass-Steagall Act, eliminating Citizens United to take money out of politics, et cetera, deconstructing all of our wars over and regimes, changing policies around the world. I gave all this. However, the system is so corrupt. There is so much profiteering made from it, $3.6 trillion this year in medicine alone, that it's not going to change. But we can change. The best medicine you can take is prevention. So if you can prevent a disease, then you're ahead of the curve. And that's what we want, to prevent. And then look for those doctors who are breaking free of the mold, and there are thousands of them, and using non-invasive techniques. So we do have options, but we don't have an option if we're not going to do our homework and be diligent and disciplined in looking out there to help people. I really appreciate your call. Very insightful, Bill. Thank you very much. Unfortunately, Ronald and Linda and Karen, all the others, I can't get you to today, but I will promise to get on board with you tomorrow. I'll go to calls right after Health and Nutrition tomorrow so you can share your thoughts. We're out of time. Listen tonight, 7 o'clock. That will be a very important listen because we're going to talk about the state of the world. Have a nice day, everyone.